Welcome to Heavy Networking from the Packet Pushers podcast network of shows for IT professionals. I am your co-host, Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conray Murray. If you'd like to connect with us, you can do so via LinkedIn, Blue Sky, and the 100% free Packet Pushers community Slack group for engineers all over the world. On today's show, we are talking about the complexities of network design for AI computing at the edge. We're not talking about AI operations as such, although that may come up in the conversation. Instead, we're focused on how to effectively cope with the network traffic patterns happening on your network as a result of AI computing workloads. Our subject matter experts come to us from VeloCloud by Broadcom. You might think of SD-WAN when you think of VeloCloud, and yeah, you'd be right, but VeloCloud is more than just an SD-WAN platform. Their tech, including some recent products that they've released or will be announcing very soon, is useful for making sure that AI computing tasks are completed on time by identifying AI computing traffic and maximizing network performance for those specific applications. Our guests today are Kangwarn Chinthamit, Director for Technology Product Management, and Sanjay Upal, VP and GM of the VeloCloud division at Broadcom. And if you think you know SD-WAN, I can promise you, not like these two gentlemen do. So Sanjay, the first question goes to you. We got to do some level setting because we've talked about AI networking on the Packet Pushers podcast on heavy networking several times, and the context has almost always been data center networking. So in this conversation, are we talking about data center networking for AI, or are we talking about something else?
Now, firstly, thank you so much for the question and the podcast. In short, the answer is no. AI networking for us is not the networking that is inside the data center. That is a space in itself. But the AI networking that we are referring to is the networking that happens that is distributed across an enterprise or a service provider. And it's the communication between all these endpoints and the AI, that application that runs on top. So the networking that is needed to support AI applications that run across a distributed enterprise, that's what we refer to as AI networking.
So that sounds like edge networking to me. It sounds like edge compute, where we need to deal with distributed data. It's kind of like that problem. We're not going to send the data up to the cloud to do compute necessarily. We might be doing it locally. So we're doing some kind of, in this case, AI-specific networking that happens to be happening across a WAN. Is that right?
Yeah, so it is across the WAN. And I'll let Kangwarn comment as well. But it doesn't necessarily have to be associated with compute at the edge, because even if you're running a lot of models that are distributed, you need to access them from various places. So it's the access that's the first part, and then it is the communication that could happen because there is compute that is running at the edge. And we will talk in this podcast about agentic AI and how these agents are distributed and the agents talk to one another. But that doesn't mean that the agent is actually doing compute at the edge.
I mean, the way to think about this is we see a lot of increase in the consumption of AI at the edge. Whether or not the consumption of that AI use cases or application are delivered through an edge computing, right, which process some of the compute closer to the source, or it's done somewhere else. In the end, we have to make sure that the network infrastructure is able to, manage, if you use the edge computing, right, manage the distributed infrastructure, be able to distribute the model, get the information back, or if you just want to run that AI use cases and stream the video traffic to be processed somewhere else, the network need to be able to handle, right, both use cases.
Okay. So we're talking about moving data across the WAN that may need to be used in either by an AI algorithm or to train a model, something like that. We got a bunch of data coming from one place, going to another place, and it's across the WAN. And so therefore, we're talking about dealing with those sorts of traffic flows.
Correct. And the data that is traveling back and forth may be associated with training or more commonly with inferencing. And it's not the case that we used to think where training will happen once and then inferencing will happen every time up. I mean, after the training is done, because training it's very expensive and it takes very long to do. It's become a lot more democratized than that. So you can have training or pre-training or fine-tuning that is happening distributed across an enterprise. And then the inferencing is happening based on that training. So meaning that, again, in this agentic model, distributed set of agents talking to one another, each could be backed up by an SLM or an LLM that has gotten trained, fine-tuned, and then is responding to, you know, what questions are being asked.
This isn't us using ChatGPT. It's not as it's related, but not like that. This, we're talking about enterprises that are doing their own models, mm-hmm. doing their own AI and inferencing and building models out and so on.
Yeah, like, right. I mean, we're not talking about just like you and I getting on our laptop and talk to ChatGPT, right? Because, I mean, that's sort of like one use case of Gen AI. The other one is like technology like the LLM or even the SLM. What it can do is to power the AI agent or the agentic AI workflow, right? Meaning that now you can have a set of distributed applications with the intelligence that it can actually have its own reasoning and thinking and be able to take action dynamically, right? Without someone having to pre-program or hard code the rules. So now, as you can imagine, there's a communication of that agent, right, to the SLM or the LLM service, but also the agents will need to exchange and communicate among one another and to make that whole use case or the application come to life.
So you mentioned distributed, and I guess that's sort of one of the core problems we're grappling with here is that we're not just talking about, you know, sort of one application cluster in one data center. We're talking about different kinds of applications and different data resources being pulled together across maybe one cloud environment or multiple cloud environments or geographically distributed, yes?
Correct, yes. This is geographical distribution. So this goes beyond the individual person, as Kang Won was saying, on their laptop with a chatbot that is talking to an LLM that is at the back end. This is a distributed application, which could be in the context of consumers or enterprises. Of course, our focus is much more on helping enterprises deal with what we expect to be a tsunami of Gen AI applications that are going to be agentic.
So we've dealt with distributed applications in the past. Is there something about AI that makes it different, that requires a new approach to particularly networking on the WAN?
Yes, and I'll start with that and then Kang Won will jump in. So the first thing that we did is, because we have a very large set of edges out there, VeloCloud edges that run enterprise networks, each of them acts like a sensor. And from an anonymized perspective, we can collect data, and we collect several trillion points of data every year. And we saw this emergence of Gen AI applications that the traffic pattern looked completely different from the applications that we are used to seeing. And just a couple of areas. One area is that there was a lot more upstream traffic than downstream, lot more. And then if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because the kind of queries that you're doing, even with a simple chatbot, you do tend to send up a multimodal information. And then when you want fine-tuning to be done, using RAG, then you do tend to set up a lot more even textual-based information. So all of that is driving a lot more upstream than downstream traffic. And then what we found is that the result that is needed is needed in a particular time frame. Otherwise, the value of the information is not that great. And so the need for lower latency. So these two aspects, we think, are very different from what the traditional applications are. And the third one, which we mentioned, is a lot more peer-to-peer interaction because of these agents talking to SLMs or LLMs or to one another.
Yeah, the other thing that, I mean, with the agent, right, the way that it works is also very different from the traditional application. That, I mean, the first thing it has to do is sort of sense and be aware of everything around it, right? Could be a camera, looking at the picture and then be able to describe in two or three dimensional what it is interacting with. So now imagine that you have to send that data into an LLM or SLM service. You can see a lot more upload of the information. And in fact, based on the data that we have collected from some of the customer that we have, right? We have seen the trend of the customer that have Gen AI running, the the percentage of the upload traffic is actually going up.
As opposed to the typical web pattern where you send a query that's fairly small and you get a big payload back. That's what we've been dealing with for forever. And now it's, we could be sending, well, you gave the example of the AR glasses and sending video upstream and so on. So we could be sending massive amounts of data upstream to be processed and analyzed and then getting a big data set back as well.
And you could get a small data set back. I mean, right now, as you know, the cost of analyzing from an LLM has fallen through the floor. What used to be $100 is now 15 cents if you want to process a million tokens or so. And a million tokens roughly can correspond to an hour of video. So for 15 cents, you can send up an hour of video and you can ask it all sorts of questions saying, which is the most interesting part of this video, or summarize the video for me, or any other question like that. And if that costs you only 15 cents, but it's going to cost you a lot more to send, you know, that many million tokens upstream through a distributed network. So in fact, the network, both the cost, which is the performance, the security, which we haven't talked about yet, and the response time are all very critical for this new heavily upstream-based traffic.
Yeah, the other thing I want to add, right? I mean, you mentioned that compared to the web-based traffic, right? The other thing that's also different is, like, I mean, imagine like when you use ChatGPT and you see that the response is coming back as a stream, meaning that, so if you actually go and take a packet capture, you now will see a lot of smaller packet coming in. It's not this big chunk of payload that is coming back like a traditional web application anymore, because the text that is coming back is stream. So you're going to see a lot of smaller packet, right? So it's going to drive a lot of change in traffic pattern when this thing gets widely deployed.
Mm. Another thing you mentioned was that the traffic is highly sensitive to latency. Latency is a big deal here. Now, from a data center perspective, we've talked about the latency problem where you've got a distributed problem being spread across multiple GPUs in a cluster. If you idle one GPU because of a latency problem, you've idled everything in the cluster, and that's a waste of resources. Is this the kind of problem we're talking about here as well?
Well, that's in the context of training primarily, and the GPUs talking to one another to finish a training task on time. What we're talking about is finishing a task on time that's on the in the context of a human or a robot or a thing or another application, but it being highly distributed. So it's really the latency across all of those agents talking to one another to give a response back. So it's, once again, as Drew was saying, it's a distributed problem, and it's not contained within the confines of a rack or a data center.
So what kind of organizations do you anticipate sort of being on the front edge of running into this problem of grappling with the quirks of these new AI applications that need to be thinking about maybe how they're architecting their WAN or allocating network resources?
Yeah, so I think one that actually we're sort of looking at the data that we are seeing as well, right, in terms of which organization we start to see the trending of the Gen AI traffic. And we found that retail seems to have maybe like a quicker adoption, right, than others. And I think it sort of fit into like the highly distributed nature of a retail store, right? The other thing that, I mean, they definitely are bringing in AI technology, right, to improve either the customer experience or even like the store associate be able to do a better job helping the customer, basically bringing the customer back into the store. And this is where we believe the investment into AI and Gen AI and the agent application, this is one vertical that we're going to see a lot of uptake.
Yeah, and I'd say that there's right behind retail, there'd be a couple others. One would be healthcare and the other one would be manufacturing. So manufacturing, because a lot of the factory floor is getting digitized. And once it gets digitized, you know, we're just coming off from hearing all the news out of CES, where people are predicting $40 billion worth of robots are going to be there in the next 5 years or so. And if you just see, obviously, manufacturing is the first place where these are getting deployed in a distributed fashion. And then healthcare, because the cost of people going to where they need to get health, their care done, you know, that cost is not going down. So to get care that is done wherever you are, which then again implies clinics and pop-up health and, you know, even health in the context of your homes, all of this makes it a lot more distributed. And then if you can have an agentic approach where each of these agents are specialized to answer one type of question, again, back-ended by all of your health information or diagnostic information from across the board, you know, all of this will imply much more distribution. So I'd say retail, followed by healthcare and manufacturing.
So the latency problem is more interesting then, because from that one problem I described that's common in data centers, as you said, it's a training problem. Here we're talking about data needing to move around a wide area network in a very timely fashion so that not only user experience, but also applications are able to get access to the data they need so that they can run their algorithms, make decisions, take actions. And latency is going to slow things down or actually maybe prevent work from happening.
Well, if it's slow enough, it'll prevent work from happening. I mean, we know that when the cloud came in, there was that adage that said, the cloud is, that's just somebody else's computer. But it happens to be not local to where you are. It happens to be situated somewhere else where you have no control over. Well, this is going the next step further. So if you really have this agentic approach, which is going to replace, we think, a lot of manual labor that is done, then if the responses don't come back in a timely fashion, that's going to cause a fair amount of dissatisfaction. And so, you know, this tightening up on the latency, which is from the time that the first agent gets the request to the answer that is back, that is not something that traditionally we've looked across the WAN. A lot of it is not based on peer-to-peer interactions that give a single result, but it's moving into that direction. And therefore, the peer-to-peer traffic and then, you know, making sure that you're not leaking data that you should not be sending up through RAG, those two become kind of inextricably bound. And we have WAN constructs like segmentation and slicing that we can use to make sure that this agentic traffic happens with the right security and performance.
So if I can push on that a little bit, though, we're talking on a Zoom call right now with voice and video in real time, very latency sensitive, but the, you know, wide area network is generally pretty solid for this kind of traffic. Are these newer AI applications operating in a different performance window where they have even lower tolerance to latency?
Well, just think of that we are joined on this Zoom call by a couple of agents. One agent that is doing transcribing and the other agent that's doing real-time translation into five different languages. Now, if those agents are distributed out, and you know, there's every reason that they should be, if those agents can't keep up to this conversation that is happening, or I could just ask the agent that is doing the real-time transcription and say, please go back 10 seconds and tell me what I said, or tell me what Ethan said, or bring up this other podcast that you did, you know, last week. If that is not responsive enough, this whole conversation will become extremely stilted. And that's just one layer of agent. You could think of that agent having to talk to some other agent at the back end that is fronting the repository of all of your podcasts. So this kind of agentic model where an agent has the agency to act on a human being's behalf is extremely powerful. But then if it's not constructed well, it's going to be like a house of cards, and people are going to be extremely dissatisfied that these agents are not responding as intelligently or as quickly as, you know, as they've been used to.
One subtle difference is, like with SD-WAN, we actually, in the past, we spent a lot of focus on making sure that we can deliver on end user experience. Mm-hmm. And now fast forward to today, right, with agentic AI, and we're not talking about just the end user, right? We're talking about program and computer and agent, and it doesn't complain, right? When like you and I can complain that, hey, the Zoom call is bad, the quality is not good. The agent will continue to work, but not as efficient as it should be. And now you could result in the outcome is not as what you desired. Mm-hmm. So now what SD-WAN we have to do is just take into account, not just be able to identify and optimize the end user experience, but the same thing apply to the computer program or this agent that are going to be highly distributed.
Yeah, and Sanjay, you raised a point that I hadn't considered, that there are new applications and services and capabilities that can be built on top of existing things like this Zoom call that will require that kind of, can we say, hyper real-time performance?
Yes. We used to talk a lot about intent-based networking, But as Kangwon just mentioned, outcome, this is really outcome driven. The outcome is hugely important. And that outcome, if it's not achieved in a certain time frame, of course, with the right security, then it's pretty useless.
Now, you mentioned some specific verticals where you feel this is going to be already it's being impactful, medical and retail and some other ones. Broadly speaking, over time, how widespread do you think this networking challenge is going to be? Is this something all network engineers should be paying attention to? Or is this going to be like, yeah, it depends on the vertical you're in, whether or not it's going to matter that much?
I think absolutely. I think this is a shift that is happening that is going to be a persistent shift. And it's going to be something that is going to completely change the nature of networking. Just like we found 20 years ago, when the cloud and SaaS came in, where we shifted into, you know, what is now software-defined WAN, this is one of those shifts.
Yeah, I think definitely, right? I mean, if you look up like AI and agent and agentic AI, this is probably the most talked about concept, right? And not even a concept anymore, right? There are already some real-life implementation of the use case, and this is just going to grow, right? But this is what we believe is going to be the next wave of how applications are developed and deployed going forward.
Right. So I want to move us into the next part of our discussion, which is VeloRAIN. VeloRAIN is an acronym here, Velo Robust AI Networking. It's a solution that you've developed to address the problem set that we just laid out. So you guys have technology that helps us deal with the nature of these new AI conversations that are happening in a distributed fashion, happening across the WAN, happening at the edge. Explain the core features of VeloRAIN for us.
Yeah, so VeloRAIN, and of course, the reason we said VeloRAIN is, of course, it's associated, RAIN comes from clouds, and we are VeloCloud, right?
I see what you got there.
Now, the RAIN part, I think the first thing that we have to do is we have to identify the application, and we have to identify that there is a GenAI application, which application it is, whether it's composed of agents or not. So it's the identification. And as you know, identification is becoming harder and harder because of encryption. So we're actually using AI to recognize AI. So that's the first step, which is the app identification step.
Do you see yourself in the flows? Do you see yourself?
Yeah, there's Kangwon running around in these packets trying to figure out which packet is doing what, right? So that's the first part. And then the other building block is really what we call channel estimation, which is figuring out how the underlying network is working. That's what we call the channel. And so whether it is some of these new underlays like 5G or satellite, or it is existing underlays, whether broadband or fiber and the like, we've got to figure out how they are working across a four tuple, bandwidth, packet loss, jitter, and latency. So if you have those two building blocks and you know the outcome that is needed from the application that is resulting in these packets, then one can make several decisions about whether this data should be sent upstream or not, whether the data should be sent on this link or the other link or replicated, or it should be queued. So we can do both quality of service improvements as well as we can have security controls that run over. And these constructs are done using segmentation and application-based slicing. So both of this, WAN segmentation and application-based slicing, help in achieving the outcome that you want to get from agentic networking. And that's all happening in real time. Then there's a non-real time aspect, which is the AI ops part of it, which we are calling VeloBRAIN Copilot. Okay, because there's a brain that we are saying is going to ship with every one of your VeloCloud systems. And that brain you can access in real time to ask things if you're an IT engineer. And that, in essence, everything from the identification, channel estimation, quality of service, slicing, segmentation, and VeloBRAIN, that in toto is VeloRAIN. Did I miss anything, Kangwon?
Security.
Yep. Sorry. See?
Well, he said segmentation. We got started on it.
Yeah. Is the security part called VeloStrain? I'm just straining things out. Do I win a prize?
Yeah, you do actually. Well, you know, the security part is important, especially DLP. So you want to make sure that as you're doing all this RAG, your data that is not intended to leave the enterprise is not leaving. So, you know, having the DLP identify which applications there are that are not. And we have a we have an architecture for security that allows us to do extremely fast firewalling at the edge, along with URL filtering, IDS, IPS at the edge. And then when you want to crack open the packet and decrypt it, then we do that, you know, with DLP and CASB mechanisms, primarily in a distributed fashion in the cloud. And both of these, we think, are going to be really important for this next generation of applications. So yeah, there was the security angle to add to what I said is Velorain. And then we're not too far away from releasing what's going to be our first version of Velorain.
Let's talk back through each part of the solution here. So you mentioned, you mentioned a lot of things, but let's start with what felt like SD-WAN tech to me, that is figuring out the channel and the qualities of the channel. To me, going back to, that was one of the table stakes features of SD-WAN. You can distribute and overlay across a variety of different link styles, 5G or broadband or whatever you've got, figure out the quality in any given moment, look at an application performance profile requirement, some kind of a policy you've built that says, I need this sort of latency, this sort of jitter, and then in real time, send the traffic across that link. That's pretty much the same thing we've got here, right?
No, there are some differences, because the channel that we're finding right now, there's a lot more diversity in the channel than what we had before, particularly because of the new wireless channels. So 5G, which is really enhanced fixed wireless access, is the fastest growing access mechanism here in the United States. And then there's LEOs, all of the satellite connectivity. Mm-hmm. If you look at both of those, the bandwidth, packet loss, jitter, and latency for both of these new underlays is actually highly variable. And you cannot just simply probe and get to know what the channel is. You have to actually use AI and machine learning to figure out how the channel is behaving. So that is a big difference. So once again, it is using AI to really help AI applications. But here we're using AI, which, you know, we were not using to this extent, because you got to figure out what these channels are doing. And as you know, convergence is the hot topic right now when you talk to any of the telcos. So they want to combine these underlays. They want to combine 5G with fiber, or combine satellite with 5G, or even just to combine two 5Gs together. You cannot do that unless you do a great job of channel estimation. So every step of the way, whether it is identifying the app, estimating the channel, whether it is doing the application-based slicing, which is not what we do right now, it's distinct from the network slicing that the telecom operators are working on, or Velorain, or the security. All of these have an AI angle to them that supersedes what we've done with SD-WAN to date.
Yeah, like, and then maybe I'll add on, like, if you, I mean, we talk about SD-WAN doing the channel estimation, right? And in the past, it has been sort of doing a good job when the bandwidth is static, right? I mean, you discover what the bandwidth is, and then from that point on, then you sort of do latency and jitter measurement, or maybe the application response time measurement. And different techniques are being used, right? We do a per packet measurement. Some may actually do probes and things like that. But now when it comes to the bandwidth, especially when Sanjay talked about like fixed wireless, these are the bandwidth that actually can change, right? Depending on the interference and all the other factors, and now be able to adapt dynamically to that change in real time is something that, I mean, the modern SD-WAN need to take into account. And that's one of the things that we also work on.
Okay. The next question then is application identification. You said you're using AI to identify AI streams, but I mean, that's still, in the SD-WAN days, there were companies that specialized in application identification, and they'd sell their library of signatures off to different SD-WAN providers. Some people did it internally, some did not. What are you actually doing here? Because you've got, everything's encrypted. How are you figuring out, is it truly just, we know what this is, and so we're going to train a model that, hey, if you see something that looks like this, it's going to be AI, and we want you to treat it, you know, in that way?
Yeah, it's actually a combination of things, right? One is even like just basic application identification, right? Like if you look at, let's say ChatGPT, for example, be able to differentiate between, hey, you and I just doing a regular chat or maybe using it from our phone, or the agentic AI application are making API call into the ChatGPT endpoint, right, to do reasoning and so on. That's sort of like the first step, right? It's get to the granularity of the different way of accessing the LLM or Gen AI applications. And then the second one is actually more focused on, hey, when you actually start to see the pattern of the traffic that are highly distributed, that look like the agentic AI in action, is where the machine learning and the AI of the pattern recognition come in play.
One has to train the model at the edge to say that if you see this pattern, then it's likely to be to belong to this application and an agentic workflow. And that is not what we do pervasively today, because the models have to respond very quickly as well. Usually we try to do first packet identification, but in this case, that's not possible. So you have to send a stream of information and you have to train it based on what has been seen before. And seen before meaning you might only have packet sizes, lengths, inter-arrival times, and a small part of the header. And out of that, you got to figure out, well, which application is this? Not an easy task.
Well, one of the keys, though, that struck me as like, oh, I hadn't considered that was the distributed nature of some of these applications. When you begin to see related traffic that's distributed in a particular pattern, aha, you know, that's more metadata that you can queue off of that I hadn't thought of before. So that's as opposed to just looking at a single data stream between two endpoints.
Correct.
That's pretty intriguing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Another piece here. You've been talking about application-based slicing and said this is not network slicing like they're doing at many service providers. This is application-based slicing. Now, I did a bunch of reading preparing for this show. I still couldn't get my head around exactly what this means. Can you describe this for us?
Okay. So network-based slicing essentially is on a specific underlay. So if you say that, okay, I have a 5G network, then I'm going to give you a slice of that 5G network. And then there's typically some blocks of reservation that is done across this 5G network so that you can, you know, loosely guarantee what that service is. And then you set up a slice, and that slice is, at least today, it is static. So you say that, okay, you know, here's a slice for an event, or here's a slice for high priority traffic, and that's a static slice. So essentially what you've done is you've taken the same physical network and you've divided it into a small number, typically up to four sliced networks, but each of those networks behaves independently. That's really network-based slicing. But it ends at the endpoints of what that network is. So if you're sitting on a machine with Wi-Fi and then you go across a 5G network and you pop out on the other end, on some high-speed wired interconnect, it's not running end-to-end. It's running just in the context of that, in the boundary of that 5G network. And almost always network slicing is referred to in terms of 5G, you know, maybe 6G to roll along. What we're talking about is much more of an end-to-end context, wherever one endpoint is for us, a Velo Edge, which could be a piece of software that is running on your laptop, or it could be a physical edge, all the way to the other end, may not be all the way to up to the application, but very close to the application. So we're running across multiple hops of a network or even across networks. So that's the first distinction that we have. The second distinction is that we are talking about it to be set up dynamically. This is not saying that, oh, here's a slice for low priority traffic and here's another slice for high priority, or here's an event that's going to happen for these 5 hours and you get a slice. No, this is actually dynamically set up slicing, so that you can, at the application layer, regardless of whether a network slice is available or not available, you can have an association. So for us, the slice now is an association that happens in the context of an application that is running end-to-end and requires a particular quality of service. And then we would say that there's a loose guarantee that we would give for that application compared to any other application that is running. And the first part of getting this done is network admission control. So whether this application is even allowed to be admitted or not into the network. And then there's a bunch of other tricks or attributes or algorithms that we use to make sure that this performance is distinguished from performance of all the other best effort traffic.
It's more than just QoS then, it sounds like.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, like you could like think of it as like the slice may not have to be always available, right? You can dial the slice on demand and then eventually map the set or an application, right, to that particular slice as long as it's able to deliver under the SLA that actually is needed.
Yeah, like are you doing something like segment routing to sort of choose this application path? Or yeah, I guess I'm still confused about how it's different from...
So slicing and segmentation are two independent constructs, but we could of course use segmentation to support application-based slicing, because the idea of segmentation is that, you know, it's basically logically separated and it lands on a different wharf at the other end, right? So you can use segmentation to support slicing, but it's not necessary to have segmentation for application-based slicing. Same thing with network slicing. If you have multiple network slices, we could use them just like they were separate networks, and we can use all of those at the same time, rather than saying, I'm going to use the high priority slice and not use the low priority slice. So it's really, for us, it's setting up an identifier for that particular application session that would then get special treatment across the network, starting with admitting it into the network in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask a nerdy QoS question then. In the QoS world, a QoS policy typically only takes effect if there's congestion on the network. Now, that's not true with shapers or policers, right? But with typical QoS, you got stuff stuck in a buffer and you're trying to decide who goes next. And there's a zillion different ways and techniques that you can use to pull the next packet out of that buffer, decide who goes next. This feels like it would be effective whether there's congestion or not, right?
Correct. Yes, that is correct. That this is effective whether there's congestion or not. Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
But it is also policy driven, i.e. it's based on an application or application type and the performance requirement?
It's a performance requirement. It's what that is. You know, there's some heuristics that we will use, just like we have smart defaults today. We will say that these applications are more important than others. But we expect that there will be tariffing that will help going forward. So as you get these networks set up, and we think there's going to be a constraint that will come in terms of you can't run everything at the same performance, of course. And if the telcos respond by giving us some ability to dynamically tariff, then cost will become a constraint as well. Like, will someone be willing to pay? Like, let's say you go to the Super Bowl and you know, you're a Gen Z person and you want to show everyone that you watched Patrick Mahomes throw a touchdown. Will you pay, you know, a dollar more for a 4K connection to stream that to all of, you know, your buddies who are not at the game? You've already paid $2,000 for the ticket. You've already paid $200 for parking. Will you pay a buck for that? We're guessing you will. But there has to be a tariff to support it. I mean, if there's no tariff, if all you're getting is a slice for the entire game, then it's not going to be that interesting. But you could have slices for dynamic events. And then it's beyond the QoS. It'll be QoS cost that will really control how this is used. So it's really, that's why we think that this is a sea change that is coming. Can't do this without AI. But the static way that we sell network today, where you buy 100 megabit and you know that's it, you're done. Right now, we're beginning to see just, you know, on Starlink, you get four qualities of service. They're also pretty static. But to move to a completely dynamic world is where we believe this is headed. And without it, it'd be very difficult to support agentic AI.
So let me understand this. And it sounds like it, with traditional SD-WAN, I can already prioritize different application types based on performance requirements and so on. What are you positioning this application-based slicing as sort of an add-on that customers could use to sell a new kind of service or capability to their own customers? Okay. So this isn't just for the network engineer. This is a potential business opportunity for your customers to sell other services to their own customers.
Absolutely. I mean, when Office 365 first came in, a lot of the projects actually failed because you know, you're moving somebody's Exchange server from the wiring closet all the way into the cloud, and then you couldn't get responses back in time. And then, you know, that was first wave of SD-WAN coming in. Now we're saying that with this new class of applications that is not just limited to I think, a very narrow set that happened when SaaS came in, that this is not going to be successful. And to make it successful, then our customers have the ability to go and say that, look, the one element of your GenAI project is budgeting, and one part of the budget needs to be AI networking. And then that's where these building blocks come in, where you can charge more for certain dynamic slices versus less.
And how much is VeloCloud able, like how far along the path is VeloCloud or VeloRain able to enforce this application slice? If you're talking about, you know, an agent on an endpoint or a VeloCloud gateway at a branch up through, say, a VeloCloud POP, or can you extend it even beyond that?
So wherever there's a VeloCloud endpoint, we can extend it to until we get to the point where, you know, there may be, you know, some interoperability between vendors. Now, everyone knows there's L4S and MPTCP that have been talked about for a while. Right? L4S is more recent. MPTCP has been going around for a while. But we, if you combine those two together, what we have done with our algorithms and with adding the AI smarts to it, we're well beyond what people have been, you know, talking about deploying for L4S or MPTCP. But if you're going to take that and genericize it, then of course it'll be from endpoint to endpoint. Right now, any place there's VeloCloud, which could be a VeloCloud agent, which we call SODA for software-defined access. So we have software that will run on a laptop or a machine or a a robot to a Velo Edge, to a Velo Gateway, to another Velo Edge, all the way into, you know, cloud location or a data center. All of that can be supported. Application-based slicing can support that entire network.
Okay.
Interesting. Security, guys, we got to talk about the security part of the VeloRain solution. You mentioned DLP, you've mentioned segmentation. Maybe we should start with segmentation, because when you say that, I think like micro segmentation, east-west control of traffic, that sort of thing, or something else?
No, it's really what we're talking about segmentation here is segmentation on the WAN. I don't know if you want
to. Yeah, so this is sort of, be able to secure the communication, right, between this highly distributed application like the agent into its own channel, right, that makes sure that it is separate from, all the other segment or applications. So that's what we meant by segment.
Okay, so separate how? Like, with a lot of segmentation solutions, what that implies is this filtering going on. This endpoint can talk to this endpoint, and then there's a firewall or some kind of a policy that's preventing other sorts of communications from happening, except for between these two endpoints that we know are supposed to be allowed to talk to one another. Again, like that, or because when you said separate, it almost sounded more like to be able to send traffic with the profile and characteristics, the link characteristics we're looking for. But that doesn't make sense to me from a security perspective.
Well, I mean, I think from the security perspective, it is like its own security SA, right? Meaning that it has its own encryption. So almost think of it as like a separate tunnel, right? For a set of applications that need to communicate among.
As in you'll pop something into its own tunnel. You said SA as in security association, like IPsec would have. That's unique to that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And can get terminated at a different wharf if you want. Yeah. So that's why I said there's two constructs. There's a segmentation construct and a slicing construct, right? These are two different constructs. One, you can use one with the other or without the other, but it's setting up these tunnels that we can use so that we can, from a security standpoint, isolate the traffic. Now, you can say that, SD-WAN, we do segmentation today. Yeah, but it's very, very little segmentation done in the context of peer-to-peer interactions. So really what we're looking at is how does segmentation extend into peer-to-peer agentic networking?
Well, the SD-WAN paradigm, I would think of most traffic flows. The tunnels that are built are a mesh tunnel between SD-WAN forwarding agents or forwarding units, the routers. And all the traffic that's going between this router and this router gets popped into this tunnel. And what we're saying is now there may be multiple tunnels that could
Correct.
Be going,
yeah.
Depending
Precisely.
On the conversation.
Precisely. Yep.
Yeah.
Multiple tunnels.
Yep. Okay. You also mentioned NAC. Are there other security components that are tied into the security solution to talk through?
I'm using admission control in a more looser sense, whether you admit the application or not. I also mentioned L4S, I mentioned MPTCP. So these are all constructs that we've heard of from networking, but we're using them very specially, you know, in this context to talk about how we're supporting Gen AI. So it's not NAC in the traditional sense, but it is admission control where you allow this application in or not.
You had also mentioned DLP, which I thought was fascinating since most of the traffic you're looking at is encrypted. So in order to be aware of data loss, you got to know what the data is that might be being lost. So are we dealing with an encryption, decryption, re-encryption scenario or?
Yeah, we are. I mean, with our SASE solution, we are talking about the DLP that's part of our SASE solution. So we decrypt in the cloud and then we can make a decision, which we can actually send back to the edge saying that this payload is not to be sent.
Yeah, so we're actually working on some kind of communication, right, between what the DLP see and be able to signal back to the edge so it knows how to take further action. So that's sort of one of the use cases of sort of leveraging something like DLP, right, for securing all these Gen AI applications.
Okay, thanks for the clarification on the security, what's going on there. I get that. It makes sense. Last question about the solution then. You had mentioned Velo Brain, the AI ops part of this. I'm going to be able to talk to an interface and ask it a plain language question is what I heard you say, and get back useful information from the network. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so think of it as, I think we are used to having CLI or UI, right, at the way we interact with the product. And now going forward, we believe the new interface is going to be not only just a chat interface, that you can actually have a lot more flexibility in terms of what you want it to do, be able to make suggestions. And this is sort of in the area of, some people call it AI ops or AI operation for networking. The other thing is, a good analogy would be like a Tesla car, right? You jump into the car, it sort of learn the destination that you take every weekday, which is to come to work. It already pre-programmed the car to head to that destination. The same thing can be done with the operation. Let's say we have a network engineer that every morning comes in and look at certain dashboard. And now this Velo Brain or the intelligent can sort of pre-populate the information on the dashboard so that that network engineer doesn't have to click on anything when he comes into work, right? All the information that he wants to access is basically at the fingertip. So basically the system learn and adapt to what the user wants to do.
Yeah, and that can go all the way into real time. So, you know, part of what we're thinking is how would Velo Brain be able to, well, first of all, we have to train it because we have an immense amount of data that we collect, everything from network layer all the way to application layer. We think this data is extremely useful and proprietary. It's all anonymized, but that helps to train Velo Brain on packet information, on log information, on business profile information. And then you should be able to ask it questions in real time based on what is happening right now on your network, which is different from a traditional AI ops.
You've built your own network. You've built your own model of networking data, you're saying?
We have our own networking data. We're using it to train a model.
Okay.
And then once trained, it can answer questions even using real-time data.
I could say, so in theory, if I've trained it on all the right things and it knows enough, like you said, it's going to know business data as well. I could say things like, I've gotten 10 help desk tickets in from the Chicago office today complaining about slow network performance. What's going on? I could get an answer back?
Yeah, better still, it'll tell you, hey, by the way, you are getting tickets from the Chicago office and your network in Chicago is slow because this has happened.
Oh, it'll tell me ahead of time because it would have awareness of the ticket queue and so on.
And it can see real-time network information.
Mm-hmm.
The critical part is this real-time aspect. That's very important because, as you know, the network is the lifeblood of most businesses. If something is not working right now, it's critically important that you figure out what the heck it is. And so
you're stressing that real time. Yeah, you're making, and that's actually really is a really important point because when you train a model, it can take a lot of time depending on what you're training with it. It's not that sort of a thing where it's got to train for, you know, hours or days or weeks before you can get an answer out of it. It's real time. So the model is constantly being updated with new information, and I can ask that model questions and get real time information back. So we're saying real time, like, oh yeah, of course, real time. No, not of course, real time. This is actually a hard problem to solve.
It's a very hard problem to solve. Yes.
Yeah. So VeloBrain is part of VeloRain, or is that like a separate product?
No. It's part of VeloRain. VeloRain is the entire AI networking framework and architecture. It's not a product, but it's used by every VeloCloud product. So it's used by VeloCloud SD-WAN, VeloCloud SD-Access, VeloCloud SASE, and a new product which we haven't launched, but we will be launching in Mobile World Congress.
I see. So VeloRain is technology that your other products are built on. So I'm not going to call up you guys and go, hey, I want to buy VeloRain. You're like, no, you said right. That's the wrong thing.
Yeah, it's an architecture. Yeah. It's an architecture that power all of the VeloCloud products, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was thinking it was a product in the sense that, didn't you just announce this not that long ago?
Announced the architecture and the framework. Yeah. And I specifically said it's not a product. I announced it in Barcelona in September.
Was
it September or November?
November.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. We got some requests.
September was in Vegas.
Yeah, we got some requests. Like, hey, I'm interested in buying the VeloRain. It's not for sale.
But I'm going to buy VeloCloud SASE or whatever product set, and it's going to have VeloRain underneath. Correct. And then there's going to be this stuff coming up, new things you're going to be announcing soon that are built on this framework as well. You're teasing us, is what you're saying. You're not ready to talk about it, but there's things coming soon.
Watch this space.
Okay. Very good. So if people want to find out more about VeloRain or just VeloCloud in general and the product set, where do they go?
Yeah, we'll post a link, right? And with the landing page and the information for those that want to get into more detail. But otherwise, reach out to myself or Sanjay.
And there will be the first release of VeloRain, which will be, you know, the beginning of February 2025. So if any of you VeloCloud enthusiasts are, you know, anxious to get your hands on that first release, which we internally call Absinthe, which is the green vile liquid or delicious liquid, depending on how you look at it. It's Absinthe, which is our first release of VeloRain.
Very good. Just for clarification again, VeloRain's not a product.
Not a product. So you have VeloCloud, you want a VeloRain release of technology that you can run with VeloCloud, you know, send us a note and we'd be happy to add you to the list.
So if I'm an existing VeloCloud customer, is this like a software upgrade that I would do to get hold of Absinthe or to get plugged into this new infrastructure you're building?
Not immediately. It's something that we're going to make it available to selected customer to start with. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think if you're interested, reach out to us and we'd be happy to work with you on it.
Yes, it will be a software upgrade though. You don't have to buy a new piece of hardware. Now there's some restrictions if you want to run VeloBrain on the kind of, you know, device you would have, but that's later down the road.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. If you're out there listening and you want to reach out to these guys, you've been listening to Kangwarm Chinthamit and Sanjay Upal. And you can find links to them. You go up on LinkedIn and find them. Or if you want, go to packetpushers.net. Look for the show notes for this episode. We'll have links there and everything to VeloCloud and VeloRain related content. We've got a bunch of links for you if you want to dig in more deeply. And thank you very much for listening to Heavy Networking today. Is this stuff real? At the moment, I think the rise of AI computing is going to change the practice of network engineering for many of us. We're past the hype cycle. We're still in the hype cycle on some degree, but this is happening. I think this is real. And I see VeloRain and that architecture as an entrant that is going after this very interesting specific problem that helps with AI work across the wide area. But from a platform perspective, right? It's got all these other interesting use cases as well. They're already teasing us about a new product that's coming down the line. Now, if you ring up Broadcom and talk to VeloCloud about VeloRain and anything else you're interested in about their their new technology here, be sure to let them know that you heard about them on Packet Pushers. That does help us keep the lights on around here. We really appreciate it. I have been Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conry Murray. You can connect with the two of us in many different ways, but the easiest way, visit packetpushers.net and go from there. You can figure it all out. Everything on our site is 100% free for you, as sponsors like VeloCloud by Broadcom pay our bills. On our site, you will find our newsletters, a dozen different podcasts, our blog, YouTube channel, and more. And it is all content designed for your professional career development. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.